Welcome to the Closing Mark Report. It's November the 3rd, 2006. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. And later in a half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, the NFU is not happy about the proposed merger between the Chicago Mercantile Exchange and the Chicago Board of Trade. And the pork producers would like variety meats to head for Vietnam, but there's a political snafu. By the way, variety meats are things like kidneys, hearts, tongues, you know, the stuff mom made for us out on the farm because it was, well, in the freezer anyway, but that most Americans don't eat. The nice term for those is variety meats. I believe that was coined during one of the world wars by the U.S. government. The troops got the good stuff, and here on the home front, they got to eat variety meats. Anyway, Dave Dickey will have details of these stories shortly. And then we'll take a second run at a story you heard a couple of weeks ago, but in a different form. It's all about how one researcher here on campus is trying to make corn stalks more digestible by cattle so that it can provide about 80% of the performance of corn when mixed with DDGs as a feed ration, food and fuel from the same acre, right here on AM 580's Closing Market Report.
This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
In Chicago on this Friday afternoon, futures finished the day like this. December wheat at 491.5, up a penny for the day. March contract at $5.14, up 3.5. December corn futures 342.25, down 2.5. The March at 357, off 2.25. And the May contract at 364, down 3 cents. July futures at 369.5, and they finished down a penny for the day. December futures for next year finished at 349.5, and they were down 1/2 on the afternoon. November beans at $6.49, up 3/4 this afternoon. January for a Friday at $6.62 3/4, up 1 1/2, and the March settled at $6.73 3/4. They were up a penny and a half as well. November beans at $6.97. The new crop finished 3 cents higher. December bean meal futures 20 cents higher at $195.50. December soybean oil in the products at $27.68, up 18. November feeder cattle over at the Mercantile Exchange, $101.42. They were off 55. And December live cattle at $85.90 were off 85 cents. February live cattle down $1.15 today at $88.95. Lean hogs December contract $64.17.5 were off 42.5 cents. Outside markets, crude oil January contract $60.95 a barrel, up $1.33. They're at $61. December futures are still trading below 60 bucks at $59.35 a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial Average now at 11,988, and that's off right at 30 points for the afternoon.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Joining us now to take a look at what happened at the Chicago Board of Trade and the Mercantile Exchange, as he does most Friday afternoons, is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Lucky you. You got a great week to wrap up and tell us what happened.
Well, it's kind of just a nutty trade right now between the beans and the corn, especially as we go into the report next week, Todd. We run our numbers through our model, and you know, you got these pre-estimates out earlier this week, which made sense for the corn. Since October 11th, these corns rallied about 70 cents, and if you run it through the model we use, that would say that we're probably dealing with about a 260 million bushel less carryover, or right around a 750, 740 carryover coming into this report, that the trade is trading that and pricing that in right now. That seems pretty normal given the Informa SC Stone numbers. But then if you take a look at beans, the November futures have gone 90 cents higher. And using the model, we'd say that would have to equate to about 100 million bushel less carryover, more like a 460 carryover. So you've got an issue where as the corn carryover and the bean carryover come closer and closer together, and as the NOV beans and the 07 contract outstrip the DSO 7 futures on this idea that it needs to buy back acres, you know, in November, you really have to sit back and take a look at, are we really doing this going up in this kind of manner in beans because it's just following corn and wheat and it's kind of the same model as 95-96. And when we went back and looked at it, yeah, the prices are very similar. August 1995, NOV beans went from 585 to about 680. in November '95, but we were also dealing with a 180 million bushel carryover for beans at that time too. So our mindset is the basis is starting to slip in beans. We suspect the producers are rewarding the market. We're very glad they are, because that this fundamental mindset that we have going into the report just doesn't add up right now.
Well, have you taken a look, and unlike corn, which is a kind of a one horse sort of place where the United States raises far and away more corn than any place else on the globe, beans, of course, are raised in China and South America, where they've got South America has the same size crop that we do. Have you taken a look at beans and carryover for the whole of the year, or for the whole of the globe? And oil seeds in general, and does it tell you a different picture in terms of carryout than what U.S. carryout might be?
I can look at that right now because we're on the FarmDoc website, and that's a great reference tool. We were looking at for world oil seeds around 17 million metric tons during the 95-96 time period. Gee, guess what? We're at 55 million metric tons right now. So the point of the U.S. and the world numbers are the same, and a good friend, Brian Maple at FC Stone, sent some information up earlier this week to me, because we've been talking a lot about South America lately, and his most recent intelligence coming out of Brazil suggests that they indeed may be moving away from sugar, because sugar prices are kind of on the ropes right now, and also that you have to have a sugar facility pretty close to you, within about 50 miles or so, to be able to process the sugar cane because of their infrastructure down there. And the break-evens in Brazil, based upon his intelligence down there, is around 6:30 in May beans. So we're just looking at all the possible angles right now going into the report and saying, okay, where is the risk? We can see the really nice upside potential in the corn, especially if the wheat leads us higher on the tight world stocks. But in the soybeans, like we said today this morning, I guess my basic point is we get more and more nervous as the trade goes higher. If it does go higher into the report, it puts more burden on the USDA to not only not raise yield and production, but we really need a lower yield in production, because we may have a tough time later down the road once the wheat and the corn do go ahead and top out. It may be a really tough road for beans, and we may not get a weather market play like we'd like to, either off South America or the United States later.
Is that statement true for corn as well? Does the USDA need to lower both yield and carry out or production for corn to maintain the price structure that seems to be building into Chicago?
You hit the question that probably keeps me up most at night right now going into this report, because I guess the way I look at it and the way the USDA would come out, if they come out and say we are not close to a 750 million bushel carryover, we're closer to that 996 that we gave you last month,
mm-hmm.
That would put a red flag into the balance sheet guys up in Chicago to look right at demand and say, okay, did this come out of demand, or did this come out of not a biggest reduced yield as we thought we'd get? Actually, I think that it would probably be more friendly to market if we did get the increase from the yield not being lowered. In other words, if they don't tamper and lower demand, I think Chicago can contain it and manage that pretty good, saying, well, they can come back later in January and change it and lower it. We still got red-hot demand. But you're starting to see some key South Korean corn purchasers and feed purchasers come in and start to buy all the way to June. I had the strangest conversation this afternoon. A fellow in New York from a hedge fund called asking about ethanol and livestock, wondering exactly when and who is going to give and who's going to blink, and it was like a game of chicken. And this guy was really, really interested in what was going on. And I'd never had a phone call like that before from somebody in the hedge fund industry, just off of a Dow Jones comment that we made in the hogs last week. So it's certainly the demand's got the attention of the market, and that's where probably the biggest issue comes to play, is if we see demand weaken, that's a tough thing to have to deal with if you got long calls or if you're in the bin with corn.
Did you happen to ask him how much money he controlled?
No, I said, can I get in? I said, do you do anything for no money down?
Yeah, we'll be eating variety meats out here soon. Oh, man. All right. So what else do we need to talk about this afternoon that you saw in the week in the marketplace that we really need to to cover. And that could be at the Mercantile Exchange, could be in the wheat pits, could be somewhere else around the globe.
Well, the crude oil looks like it's trying to find a bottom, and the bonds are looking like they're trying to find a top. One of the things we've seen in the outside markets this week is maybe a transition to where the markets are looking more back towards inflationary pressures and not as fearful about the slowdown in the economy and the demand. So if we keep the Dow Jones moving higher here and the bonds staying weak, we actually might see a dollar rally on this inflationary mindset. So we're going to have to watch that real closely in the next week or so and see if that's a three-month trend.
And then we do have to ask about the cash sales for corn and soybeans. Are your recommendations to do what with that you have unpriced at this point?
Sure. We went to 100% on the 06 corn, and we've started to pick up our second 25% of re-ownership in the bought March calls. We also sent the email out this afternoon, as we talked about this morning with Dave, that we did let go, went from 15 to 30% hedged in 07 beans at the $7 level.
Okay. We thank you much for joining us today.
Thanks for having us, Todd. You guys do a great job.
We appreciate it, and it's a lot easier with you guys on hand with us.
Thank you, sir.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. And that is Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at agrigold.com.
Well, just after the bottom of the hour, we'll take a complete look at the agricultural weather forecast for the Midwest with the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center. His name is Steve Hilberg. Our own Ed Kieser says this afternoon in extreme north central and northeastern Indiana, there will be a mix of clouds, some sunshine elsewhere, sunny. Highs will range from 38 in northeastern Indiana to 53 in southwestern Illinois. Tonight in western Illinois, becoming cloudy. Elsewhere, clear to partly and cloudy and cold. Lows will range from 22 in northeastern Indiana to 35 in west central Illinois. Tomorrow in the north, mostly cloudy. Some scattered sprinkles in central sections, considerable cloudiness. In the south, partly sunny. Highs from 44 in northern Illinois to 58 in the south. Dave Dickey's here now with today's agricultural news.
In agricultural news, the National Farmers Union is calling for the U.S. Justice Department to investigate the proposed merger of the Chicago Board of Trade and Chicago Mercantile Exchange. The NFU says the merger could be detrimental to farmers and the agriculture industry. NFU officials want to ensure the merger does not result in consolidation of contracts that farmers rely on. Last month, the Merc announced a plan to buy the CBOT for $8 billion, creating the world's largest financial market. Normalized U.S. trading relations with Vietnam, backed by a number of U.S. farm groups, has run into political problems at home over Vietnam's detention of a Florida woman. Florida Senator Bob Martinez has placed a legislative hold on consideration of Vietnam's request to join the World Trade Organization until the issue is resolved. Nick Giordano is International Trade Counsel for the National Pork Producers Council. He says there's a lot at stake for U.S. producers.
We think that variety meat exports alone are going to increase from about just over 3 million up to over 16 million, and that's going to be a significant impact on our producers' bottom line.
President Bush will visit Vietnam later this month. Congress must award Vietnam permanent normal trade relations, or PNTR, as part of the WTO membership process. Giordano says that could happen after the November elections.
I think the president badly wants the Congress to pass PNTR before his trip to Hanoi. I know that the White House is very focused on the issue.
About 30 U.S. ag organizations are supporting passage of PNTR for Vietnam. A University of Minnesota team has invented a process that heats oil and sugar about 1 million times faster than it can be done in a kitchen, and without the introduction of a fossil fuel, produces synthesis gas which can be used to make gasoline. Currently, a key step in converting oil to biodiesel requires the addition of methanol, a fossil fuel. The new process skips the biodiesel step and turns oil straight into hydrogen and carbon monoxide gases. A Purdue University agricultural economist says corn production in 2007 will need to increase more than 8 billion bushels to meet growing ethanol demand. Chris Hurt says that means growers may need to plant the most acres in corn for the past 60 years.
We're going to have to be producing a crop that's something in the range of 12.2 to 12.3 billion bushels. This suggests the potential need of as much as 88 to 89 million acres of corn. And that's the most acreage since 1946.
Hurt notes that high corn prices could reduce export and feed use demand, moderating his projection. USDA's Foreign Ag Service is expanding its website to include a new database. The database features weekly and historical USDA data, including current U.S. export sales and shipments, figures for certain grains, soybeans and products, wheat products, rice, corn, beef, and more. Data dating back to January 1st of 1999 will be available. The website address is www.fsa.usda.gov. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Thanks, Dave. Dave Dickey, of course, your Director of Agricultural Programming here at the WILO radio stations. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of the Closing Market Report and Commodity Week, reminding you that if you visit WILLAG.org by about 6 o'clock tonight, you'll find that program posted on the website. It doesn't air, of course, on the radio station until 11:30 a.m. tomorrow. Our guest for Commodity Week, John Bondurant. Should be a great show. Be sure to tune in at 11:30 tomorrow morning. Pick it up off the website after 6 o'clock tonight. Or just wait for it to arrive on your computer via a podcast. A lot of it's there right at WILLAG.org. Well, up next, scientists at the U of I say it is possible to raise food and make ethanol from the same acre of corn. There are about 40 faculty and staff members at the University of Illinois working on biofuels. Larry Berger is an animal scientist. He's been testing ways to make corn stalks complement distillers' dried grain as a feedstuff for cattle. DDGs are a byproduct of the corn-to-ethanol process.
We're doing experiments right now where we're feeding up to 40% of the diet as distillers' grains. And it works very well. In fact, in some of our initial experiments, we're using distillers' grains and soybean hulls together, we're able to replace corn and get almost equal performance. So with the combination of corn stalks and distillers, we don't think we can go, we won't be able to achieve performance equal to corn. But our goal is to come up with a mixture that will give us, let's say, 80% of the performance of corn.
That's the point at which Berger believes it becomes economically feasible to harvest the corn stalk to blend with DDGs as a cattle feed. The trick is getting the corn and the stalk harvested separately and to make the stalk palatable and digestible.
We're doing a variety of experiments. We're looking at harvesting some of the stalks before the plant is totally dried down. So we're actually handling it more like silage. We're also looking at harvesting the dry stalk after the corn is totally dried down and grinding, treating, and pelleting that to make a product, a similar sort of corn replacement product. So we're looking at different approaches. Each has potential advantages as far as how the farmer would utilize it.
The green forage, says Berger, is more digestible than the dry product. He's hoping to increase the usefulness of both to about 70%. The dry product is generally 50% digestible by a ruminant, the green 60%. This can be accomplished by treating the forage with an enzyme.
Yes, a inoculant with an enzyme in it is one of the things we're looking at. We're also looking at what's called alkaline peroxide treatment. It's a combination of sodium hydroxide and alkaline peroxide, which we developed here, that shows real potential for improving the digestibility. And this material would be sprayed on the forage as you put it into a silo or into a silo bag. And so it would treat and react with the forage over time. And then you would mix it with the distiller's grains once you took it out of the silo bag or bunker silo.
One idea for this is to pick the corn earlier, as high-moisture corn, and then to come back and harvest the green stalk. Early research says feeding high-moisture corn to an ethanol plant may improve its efficiency. The important word there, says Berger, is may. He and 39 other researchers at the University of Illinois are working on ways to make an acre of corn provide ethanol and feed, food and fuel for the future. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Harvest all wrapped up there?
No, but we're getting down to the point rows here.
Down to the point rows. She's almost done.
Yep. We're hopefully this will be the last weekend that we're open.
And then how much do you have sitting on the ground?
A little over $2 million.
And that's just about what you were expecting,
I think. That's about what we were expecting, yes.
And how's cash basis been through this week?
We have improved the corn basis 4 cents through the course of the week, 4 cents also up on the beans. So really, when you look at it, it's quite an amazing week. You take up corn 10 cents on the board, 4 on the basis, beans up 13, 14 on the board, and another 4 cents on the basis, and do that in the face of relatively heavy movement all through the week.
And are you expecting the movement to continue at these levels next week?
I guess I expect it to move through the period when we get the dispositions done on the corn coming in. I don't know that if you'll see additional sales from stuff that has been put away, but as it's coming in or people have to make their store sell decision, we're seeing a good bunch of it being sold. And on the other side, we're seeing good-sized margin calls on the other side of that.
How does... Once the corn gets into the hand of the merchandiser or the elevator at this point, does the marketplace change for the commercials so that if relatively speaking, there's 70 or 80% of the corn that's in the hands of the elevators, does that really change how the commercial has to think about bidding for corn?
To a large extent, it becomes more of a basis ball game than a flat price ball game. Just on general cash movement. From the elevator standpoint, we're buying it, hedging it, and the basis is the only thing that makes a difference to us. If you're sitting here in one of the years where you have a huge amount of the grain in the hands of the producer, basis is secondary. The producer is looking at flat price movement on it. So it kind of changes what the key determinant of moving grain is.
So would I be right to say then that it really wouldn't matter, and this is what I think you told me, that it really wouldn't matter at to some extent if the market just dropped to you, relatively speaking, as long as you could cover the basis?
As long as we could make a gain on the basis, correct.
And is that more likely to happen when the grain is in the hands of the elevator, do you think?
Oh, possibly. You can't say definitely, but I think there will be definite opportunities out there this year.
Okay, and then what are your bids for the day?
We are at 333 at Paxton on nearby corn and 642 on soybeans.
We appreciate you being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you much. That's Bruce Bostard. He's the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. Joins us here on the Closing Mark Report. That happens each and every Friday afternoon. Hey, don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 a.m. for Commodity Week. It's our weekly analysis of what's happening in the commodity markets. This week, our guest, John Bondurant, will be posted to the website tonight by about 6 o'clock at WILLAG.org. In 2 minutes, we'll take a look at the agricultural weather forecast. Your regional newscast comes up right now.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. A ceremonial groundbreaking has taken place in Danville for a new $30 million biodiesel plant. Bunge North America says the plant would use up to 30 million bushels of soybeans, much of them crushed at Bunge's plant next door to the future operation. The plant is expected to create about 15 new jobs when it starts producing the fuel in early 2008. Bunge is an investor in the plant along with another company, Biodiesel Investment Group. The state of Illinois has pitched in about $5 million to build the plant. Peoria-based Caterpillar says 2007 sales are expected to be flat to slightly higher than this year's total due to weakened demand for its on-highway engines and a slowed U.S. housing market. The heavy equipment maker also says next year's earnings growth will be the slowest in more than 5 years and could come in short of Wall Street's expectations. Indiana health officials say 4 people have died this year of West Nile virus. The most recent death occurred in Marion County. No other details were released today. State officials also report 21 new cases of the mosquito-borne illness, bringing to 80 the total number reported in 2006 in Indiana. Illinois has had 9 West Nile-related deaths so far. Special designation has come to 2 buildings with special places in Champaign-Urbana history. The Illinois Traction Building on University Avenue in Champaign and Urbana's Lincoln Square Village have been named to the National Register of Historic Places. The designation makes them eligible for funding and other incentives for future restoration. The Traction Building once housed the headquarters and terminal of an old electric rail line, and Lincoln Square was one of the nation's first fully enclosed shopping malls. Experts say car-deer collisions are rising across the country as urban sprawl invades the countryside where deer once roamed. Bloomington-based State Farm says claims from car-deer crashes were up 6% for the 12 months that ended June 30th. The increase was the first since the nation's largest auto insurer began tracking the accidents in 2002. Officials say no one keeps national statistics, but most agree that car-deer accidents are climbing. They blame urban sprawl along with mating and hunting seasons that make October through December the most dangerous time of the year for crashes. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
I'm Todd Gleason, AM 580 Agriculture. You're listening to the Information Advantage at WILL Urbana. We're joined now to take a look at the agricultural weather forecast for the afternoon by Steve Hilberg. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
That last news story there about deer and Rome sort of made me think about, give me a home where the I know it's where the buffalo roam and the deer and the antelope play, but apparently you can hit one of those pretty easily, too.
Yeah, they're pretty widespread around this time of year.
Yes, indeed. Keep your eyes peeled, and if you're on the, I know the folks know this, but if you're on a secondary road and there's nobody coming at you at night, make sure you have your bright lights on. You can pick up their eyes a whole lot more easier a long way out. Okay, enough on the safety tips. Tell me about the weekend for the weather, please.
Well, after a frigid morning this morning where we saw temperatures as low as 11 degrees in southern Wisconsin and in the mid-teens here in central Illinois, things will be warming up over the weekend, and we should probably next week be seeing some temperatures returning to near 60 degrees as we maintain a pretty good southerly flow, I think, most of the week. And, of course, that will bring us a little bit of rain. Sprinkles have been in the forecast for tomorrow, and right now I don't see anything to change that feeling. That could be a few sprinkles, but nothing substantial. Maybe a couple of showers in southern Illinois and Indiana on Sunday, and then a little break, but not very long, as another system starts moving in here Monday and Tuesday. So it looks like a generally wet but not overly wet period here next week with, little showers around here and there. And they're still going to have some problems out to the east of us in Ohio and Indiana and Kentucky where they've had a lot of rain the last couple of weeks and probably have had a lot of trouble getting harvest completed. And they're not going to get much help this week either.
And maybe if you can give us a little more detail about Tuesday, since that's the day most people want to get out and vote.
Exactly. Right now, I think the way it's looking, if we do get some rain, I think it tend to be in the morning as this system is departing the region, especially in Illinois. In Indiana, we can see some showers actually throughout the day. But it doesn't look like it's going to be a widespread thing, more of your summertime hit-and-miss type activity. So we're not talking the torrential downpours or steady cold rains that we've experienced the last 2 weeks or so. So it shouldn't be too bad, but definitely won't be nice, sunny Indian summer weather.
We appreciate you being with us for the day.
Okay, Todd.
Thanks much. That's
Bye-bye.
Steve Hilberg. He's with the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here in Champaign County.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Ramada Hotel, featuring a heated indoor pool, in-room high-speed internet access, in-room microwaves and refrigerators, a continental breakfast bar, and jacuzzi suites. The Ramada is located off I-74 and North Lincoln Avenue in Urbana.
And that is today's Closing Market Report. Be sure to tune in tomorrow morning at 11:30 when John Bondurant will be our guest on AM 580's Commodity Week. You can pick it up off our website, of course, at WILLAG.org this evening, just after 6 o'clock tonight. You have a very good and a very safe weekend. I'm Todd Gleason.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the U of I Office of the Chancellor, supporting the Campus Charitable Fund Drive. Each year, contributions from U of I employees on the Urbana-Champaign campus help support 11 social service agencies and other nonprofit organizations. Information on how to give and how your donations will help our community is on the web at ccfd.uiuc.edu.